This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 1st of September 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 31st of August 2017, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayn, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Ross Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Charity Sacked After 76 years, new routes in store as city's new bus station to reopen, architect named for station approach. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Charity sacked after 76 years. Dismayed staff and volunteers providing charitable services at Winchester's hospital have been told to leave by managers. The Royal Voluntary Service works across Hampshire to offer support to elderly people and have been involved at Royal Hampshire County Hospital since 1941. For 76 years, they have provided a trolley service and a newspaper round, as well as a shop inside the main reception at the site on Romsey Road. But in October, they say they will have to leave and stop the service, some after working there for more than 30 years. They have been given notice to vacate the premises by October the 24th, and this decision will affect 60 volunteers and 3 part-time paid staff. The Chronicle understands the charity were asked by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust to give more of their profits back to the hospital, but that figure requested was a target they could not reach. Originally founded in 1938 as the Women's Voluntary Services for Air Raid Precautions, Royal Voluntary Service is the largest volunteering organisation in British history. Volunteer Mary Finlayson, 44, of Ringlet Way, Winnell, told the Chronicle that they were not valued and had not been given an explanation for the decision. She said, "We think it is commercial. I rang up and was told on the phone by our head person they didn't really give a proper reason or notice. It feels like it was downgraded, and now they have suspended the trolleys. They're going to close the shop altogether. Maybe it'll be replaced with a chain like W.H. Smith's." For some volunteers, it has been a lifeline, and they have put a lot of time and effort into it. It's pretty much the end of the line. I feel let down by the hospital. Miss Findlayson added, "We hope to have a final get-together before it ends. It is very frustrating for us all." The RVS understands that the 3 paid members of staff will be made redundant. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the RHCH, asked to respond to the decision to terminate the RVS services and made 3 members of staff redundant, said in a statement, "Royal Hampshire County Hospital and the Royal Voluntary Service have enjoyed an excellent relationship for a long period, and we are currently in discussions regarding the future of the RVS shop at the hospital. The RVS shop is wonderful for our patients, visitors and staff, and I would like to thank all of the volunteers who gave up their time to work there." Mark Oliver, Director of Retail Operations for the Royal Voluntary Service, said, "We are currently discussing our retail service at Royal Hampshire County Hospital with the NHS Trust and exploring how we can continue to work together. Our volunteers and staff work tremendously hard, and we know their efforts are hugely appreciated. We would like to take this opportunity to thank them for everything they have done to make the services at the hospital a success. The news comes as the NHS is due to announce its sustainability and transformation partnership for services in Hampshire this autumn. There are concerns that some services at the RHCH could be downgraded. The Trust wishes to build a new emergency care centre on land at North Waltham near Basingstoke. Many local people have expressed fears that that could mean the downgrading of the A&E department at the RHCH.
New routes in store as city's new bus station to reopen. The biggest change in public transport in Winchester in more than 40 years takes place next week. The bus station is set to reopen, with most services set to take a different route. No longer will the buses turn from the station entrance on the Broadway onto the High Street and then right into Middlebrook Street. Instead, they will leave the station via Friars Gate, turn into Tanner Street and Silver Hill before rejoining the usual route on St George's Street. It is the most substantial change to traffic since the High Street was first pedestrianised in 1974. Safety for pedestrians on the High Street will be greatly improved. A new bus stop has been put into St George's Street, outside M&S, to replace the existing bus stop in Middlebrook Street, which will be removed once the new route is in operation. Middlebrook Street will become a cycle-only zone at all times, and the High Street will become a cycle-only zone between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Winchester City Council has updated the site of the old bus station, demolishing the disused depot building to allow buses a more straightforward route through the site. Councillor Caroline Horrill, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "About 3 million people use the buses each year, and this has been about improving the facilities available to them, increasing the availability of real-time travel information, and increased pedestrian safety in the area around this bus station." Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environment, added, "This is about ensuring that improved public transport options are offered to benefit the huge number of local bus users. Not only is offering alternatives to the private car important for the environment, another big plus of this move is that we can make the area look more appealing."
Architect named for Station Approach. A new architect has been appointed to revive a major scheme in Winchester following its collapse last year. The multi-million pound Station Approach project has moved a step closer following approval of Lifshutz Davidson Sandilands as the design team, who are due to begin work in September. The name of the successful firm was kept under wraps by civic chiefs following a cabinet meeting earlier this month. The approval of the firm's tender comes after the end of a mandatory 10-day standstill period and a procurement exercise by the Royal Institute of British Architects, RIBA. Last year, the controversial plan to redevelop the area near the train station collapsed when city councillors voted against an architect which won a design competition. Critics said the scheme was an overdevelopment of the area with too much car parking. But in January, the council earmarked £150 million for the development, which aims to meet a shortfall of high-quality office space and improve traffic flow. Councillor Caroline Horrill, City Council leader, said, "Developing Station Approach is an important aspect of our vision for Winchester's future and will allow us to offer much-needed Grade A office space to the business community who are regularly requesting premises of this calibre in the city. The area creates that all-important first impression for many people who come to the city and serves thousands of commuters every month. The appointment of Lifshutz Davidson Sanderson is our first step in regenerating the area so it is appealing to residents, businesses and visitors alike. The next step is to develop concept design. As with all our major projects, consultation with residents and other stakeholders is absolutely key. And ensuring that this is done satisfactorily has played a critical role in the RIBA selection process. Roger Hawkins, RIBA advisor, said, "This is an important site within Winchester City Centre and the standard of applicants was high." Lifshutz, Davidson, Sandilands demonstrated their public engagement skills and clear understanding of the need to engage residents and bring their views into the designs and into the project. The team scored very highly across the board. Director Alex Lifshutz said, "We are proud to be awarded this prestigious project. This area of the city has an important role to play. We will look to maintain a sense of Winchester in the area. People need to know they have arrived in a special place steeped in culture, showcasing heritage and benefiting from open spaces. We're committed to making sure that we consult and engage with residents and visitors to ensure we reach a design that works for the city."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Arnold, David John Arnold, at Southampton General Hospital on the 24th of August, aged 70. Heal, Anne Elizabeth Heal, on the 15th of August at West Home Care Home. Heard, Windsor Davy Heard, on the 21st of August, aged 83. Jones, William, known as Bill Jones, on the 7th of August, at home in Edinburgh. Layton, Terry Layton, at home on the 28th of August, aged 78. Mercer, Peter Frederick Mercer, at Marlfield Care Home, Alton, on the 23rd of August, aged 94. Turner, Hilary Turner, on the 15th of August, aged 66. Yaldron, Clifford Roy Yaldron, on the 27th of August, aged 91. And now we have Christian comment.
And this week it is written by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, the Canon Principal of Winchester Cathedral. And he entitles his comment, "The Return from Holiday for Christians." The French call it la rentrée, the return. It's the end of the holidays and workers return to work, children return to school, and the relaxed summer schedule gives way to bracing ourselves for commuting into a renewed Waterloo Station. I was looking forward to my summer holiday this year for months before it happened. But now the thought of sipping an ice-cold rosé and munching olives, looking out over rolling, sun-dappled countryside is just a pleasant memory. Now, it's heads down, catch up on countless emails and hope that we have an Indian summer as far into September as possible. I shudder to think that it won't be long before the air has a cooling bite, the nights draw in, the clocks will fall back an hour, and I won't see home in daylight except at the weekends. The return is a big thing for Christians, and it might help us as we begin the transition from summer to autumn. The return first of the time when Jesus comes again. In his first visit 2,000 years ago, the Son of God became a person, just like you and me. He worked out how all of humanity can live in a relationship with God. Bad things that have happened to us, or because of us, need not hold us back. History doesn't need to hamper our future. We can forgive and be forgiven because God has forgiven us. When Jesus Christ returns, he's going to recreate the whole planet. There won't be late trains or closed platforms. Work will be a joy. People will be brimming over with generosity. We won't be the polluting the planet, and hard-working people who don't have enough to feed their kids won't need to go to the food bank. The return is something Christians look forward to, because every wrong will be put right and the world will be a great place. It will be, quite literally, heaven on earth. What we really want to see is a bit more of heaven in the here and now. So I wonder how you might bring a bit of the future into the present. What would it take to make someone's day and make the return to work a joy? What does it mean to be generous on the train? Can you encourage a colleague at work for a job well done? Can you ring someone instead of replying to a complicated email? God has made humanity with the capacity to be loving, kind, and generous. More than anything, he has made us with the ability to relate to one another. The return means we can anticipate heaven and make each day a gift worth enjoying.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we start with the first letter,
which is from Councillor Eileen Berry, and she heads it Heritage First. Sir, it has occurred to me that we are in the midst of 5 major proposed developments: Bar End Sports, River Park Leisure Centre, Station Approach, Cattle Market, and also, of course, Silver Hill. A tall order, and all 5 of them are only in their infancy. My concern is the conserving of the old, the historical buildings, that, if we are absolutely honest, is what tourists come to see and will always come to see. So what have we got that we really must preserve? Of course, the cathedral, which has worked hard for its own self. The Great Hall, which is beginning to understand that it needs to do something to sustain a steady flow of money. Also, Abbey House, which is in a very sorry state and should automatically be preserved. We should be helping to preserve the City Mill. It's unique. The Guildhall, a later addition, but still a very nice building. And, of course, Winchester College is unique also. We have the Weirs, the river that runs alongside and takes us to the college area, where we have the ruins of Wolvesey Castle. I flag this up because all the new proposed developments, yes, are going to bring some people in, those people for sports, all kinds of sports, but they will come providing that the facilities on offer are better than anything else within a 15-mile radius. I have been going regularly to the River Park Leisure Centre and can see that it is overflowing at times with users, but as far as tourism is concerned, it's not a must. The new Silver Hill. Yes, it will be a mecca, providing it's got more and better facilities than anywhere else. I am talking about the bread and butter that this great city thrives on, tourism. If we don't look after ancient and historical buildings mentioned above, and those unmentioned, you can say goodbye to the Golden Goose, because no amount of new development is going to replace the uniqueness that draws thousands upon thousands of tourists to this ancient city. Councillor Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
This letter is headed Neglected, and it's from Kate McIntosh. So, on July the 4th, John Thompson Partnership, under the skilled chairmanship of Councillor Horrell, Winchester City Council leader, pulled off a remarkable feat in restoring some sense of optimism and faith in a brighter prospect for the regeneration of the Silverhill area of the city, with their presentation of their study examining the issues to be addressed in proposals for future development. Having taken a leap forward in establishing a new level of credibility, one would have expected the City Council to build on this by demonstrating a commitment to hospitable quality and accessibility in any interventions in the public realm, however temporary, around that area. How disappointing, then, to find that quite the reverse is occurring. Where there was once a fountain outside King's Walk, its neglected remains have now been cleared away, together with the benches, which at least allowed weary shoppers to rest in the shade of a tree. Instead, we have a fragmentation of this public space, with a new-built wall corralling an enclosure for the use of an ice cream parlour. The wall coping is designed to make it impossible to perch on its castellated copings. This increasingly sends the message that lingering in Winchester is permitted only as an adjunct to spending money. The bus station is cordoned off and cleared of structures, and notices inform us that redevelopment is taking place. But what is the nature of this redevelopment? Does it represent good value for public money in view of its temporary nature? Is it worth the public inconvenience, a public which has not been consulted on the matter? And that's from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, of West End Terrace, Winchester.
Richard George asks, is the right location? Sir, I'm very much in favour of redeveloping the Sir John Moore Barracks into a new hospital site to incorporate North Waltham and RHCH Romsey Road, as referred in the Chronicle of August the 24th. It is a wonderful opportunity to create a much-needed modern hospital, not only for Winchester, but the surrounding area. The proposed site has so much to offer, with a much superior road infrastructure, with the addition of both A and motorway faster traffic movement, which would be considerably better than Andover Road for the emergency services. With the site access at the barracks already basically established, a helipod, and sufficient land to provide much needed staff and patient parking, the site already in public ownership, and the release of Romsey Road for private development makes great financial sense. To me, as a patient who has been wonderfully treated at RHCH, the whole idea of building a new NHS hospital is a no-brainer. We who live in and around Winchester need it. The county needs it. So let's hope we don't waste time and get on with it. Richard George, Crawley.
Heading here, writes Elizabeth Thorne. Sir, rather than using the John Moore Barracks area as a new hospital, dare I suggest that a much better suggestion would be for the university to move there. Chronicle, August 24th. It has been obvious for a long time that it has not only outgrown its rather limited site, but also outgrown its welcome in its surroundings, with the need for student accommodation having changed the whole nature of Stanmore and other parts of Winchester, plus noise, litter, etc. When the college started to expand, a completely new site on the edge of the city should have been found. Now the ideal spot has arisen, where all educational and residential accommodation could be on one site, and the city would return to what it once was. Readers may be interested to know that current student numbers are around 7,500, with expansion planned in the near future to 10,000. That letter is from Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
John Duckworth writes, with a heading Spurious Name. Sir, many of your readers will have noticed with interest under your heading of Appreciating Our Heritage in the property section of your latest issue that it is the 245th anniversary of the first publication of your distinguished county journal. Congratulations. You also quoted there a comment that the city is steeped in history with reminders of its heritage at every turn. Barton Farm deserves to be remembered as such, so I hope you will continue to use that name in every opportunity in place of the wholly fictional Adman's invention of King's Barton, save in paid advertisements thereof. How did the council allow the use of that name, with its spurious historic overtones, for the collection of new houses they, astonishingly, permitted on the green fields of Headbourne Worthy and Abbots Barton? John Duckworth, Nether Wallop, but formerly of Hobbs Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
Hugh McCrossan heads his letter, Legoland Welcome. Sir... During the past week, I have approached Winchester from the north via Wirral and again via the A34. Seeing the progress of the Barton Farm housing development, it is crystal clear that those who campaigned vigorously against closing off Andover Road were indeed disastrously ignored. The evergreen Welcome to Winchester approach will in due course be replaced by a Welcome to Legoland, as the future traffic is redirected through more and more of these plain, boring and unimaginative constructions. Our visitors frequently comment on the green environment surrounding Winchester, but no way can they fathom why it is to be sacrificed for such an appalling alternative. I seem to recall a promise that planning in future would be under local control. But despite opposition, a centuries-old Roman road is being allowed to disappear for no reason other than pieces of silver. Hugh McCrossan, Broad Chalk Down, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter, entitled Sport is for All, is from four correspondents, namely Simon Hazlitt, Sue Falconer, Eddie Owusu, and Michaela McCallum, and I'll tell you which organisations they represent at the end. Sir, there have been many questions raised in recent Chronicle letters regarding the development of the new sports facilities at Bar End. It is an important commitment for the City Council and vital that the community is engaged. We represent some of the largest sports clubs in Winchester, catering on a weekly basis for many thousands of local people from all backgrounds and of all ages and abilities. The planned new facilities at Bar End are vital to the sustainability of sport in our wonderful city. In an age of the smartphone, sport reconnects us with ourselves and with each other, whether you aspire to be an Olympian, have fun with friends or family, or simply work off the pressures of the week. The building of first-class sport and leisure facilities is not designed to benefit a few elite athletes. It is to ensure that we continue to offer a compelling alternative to the sofa for all in Winchester and to safeguard the council's investment for years to come. And the writers of this letter are Simon Hazlitt, President, Winchester Hockey Club, Sue Falconer, Trustee, Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club, Eddie Owusu, Winchester City Royals Basketball Club, and Michaela McCallum, Chairman, Winchester and District Athletics Club, on behalf of the Winchester Community Sport Alliance.
And appropriately, this next letter is headed Sport is for All. This is from Edna Bowden. Sir, I have been a resident of Winchester since 1971 and am a lover of sport, especially ice skating, and consider sport an excellent way to keep people of all ages healthy and fit. I've been watching with interest the developments regarding a new leisure centre at Bar End and feel I must comment on the negative remarks made recently in your letters to the editor. Leisure centres, sports centres, swimming pools, ice rinks, etc. are the grassroots of sport. These leisure facilities are for the community, not for the elite. The better the facilities, the better the development and achievements of local talent, from beginner to expert. A new leisure centre at Bar End, with a 50-metre swimming pool, 12 badminton courts, etc., will not only give Winchester the top-class leisure facilities it deserves, but also will give the city and its residents a magnificent sporting venue to be proud of and enjoy. What about a privately funded ice rink at Bar End as well? That's Edna Bowden, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Peter Rees entitles his letter Slow Death. Sir, the staff car parking issue at the RHCH reflects the poor way that key NHS staff are treated. Poor consultation, lack of effective parking control, lack of funding for the trust cause the problem. For nursing staff that rely on their car for transport to work, there appear to be few concessions and guarantees, and they are insufficiently protected. The Trust does not have a fully functioning staff transport policy, and as a result, staff may leave. The Lib Dems, rebounding from their catastrophic defeat locally and nationally, raise a completely evidenceless idea to ensure the closure of the RHCH. As Con Dems, their party has been responsible for the nation's prolonged poverty and austerity, and while they propped up the last government in a cosy Vichy-style arrangement. Presumably, in their distracted state, they are delighted that Health Minister Hunt spends £44,000 of taxpayers' money having a private shower installed in his office, or that the cutting of NHS student nurse university training bursaries has resulted in an 8% shortfall in recruitment, a loss of some potentially 6,000 new nurses in training. The real issue is the privatisation of the NHS by stealth. The STPs that Steve Bryan waxes lyrical about are a complete front and represent the possibility of truly horrific times for those who are sick, relying on the NHS. The 44 STPs are to be changed to accountable care organisations, modelled on the Kaiser Permanente and United Health US model. Multi-billion contracts will go out to international tender. The NHS is slowly being euthanized from within into a two-tier quality system for those who have money and for those who don't. It will not be an NHS. It will become a PHS with some free add-ons if you're lucky. When, not if, the Labour government is elected, these scandalous backdoor privatisation plans for the NHS will be immediately abandoned. A proper review of fully funded NHS services will follow, and the health service will be safe with Labour for the many, not the few. Peter Rees, Chairman, Winchester Constituency Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And Tom Williams writes about NHS decline. Sir, I was interested to read Steve Bryan's rose-tinted views on the government reforms of our NHS, Chronicle, August the 24th. Some of us can only see a huge deterioration since 2010. Waiting times for operations are now much longer. A routine booking with one's own GP has to be further ahead, and we have reverted to a situation where very sick people are either held in an ambulance waiting for treatment or are waiting on a trolley in a hospital corridor. I have just returned from an emergency admission to hospital. where I found staff who were always encouraging, giving superb care and walking the extra mile to ensure our comfort. The bay where I was, in McGill Acute Emergency Unit, never had more than two nurses on duty. I was in one of the six beds for 3 days. The other five beds had no fewer than 15 occupants during that period. I knew before I went into hospital that nurses were grossly underpaid, but did not realise that they are severely overworked. After their 12.5-hour shift, they had a break of 11.5 hours before being back on the ward, showing a cheerful and encouraging face to patients. This is overwhelming good value for money. The Nurses' Pay Review Body has been instructed to limit pay increases to 1%, whilst the MP's review body is given to such instructions. Surely MPs should be subject to the same pay restraints as other public servants. After all, many of them do not believe that it's a full-time job. But then, perhaps they don't regard themselves as serving the public. That's from Tom Williams, Hairstock Road, Winchester.
I have a letter here from Brian Shorter, who's chairman of the Winchester ACC Science and Technology Advisory Panel. He writes, "Sir, your anonymous correspondent asks what is green about the Down Farm battery storage scheme near Oliver's Battery. Letters Chronicle, August the 10th. The main purpose of this scheme, and others already built worldwide, is to store electricity when supply exceeds demand and release it back into the grid when demand exceeds supply. Thus, as more renewable energy sources come on stream, the batteries can be used to store excess renewable energy and release it when it is needed. This has two primary green effects. Firstly, while 3/4 of UK's electricity is generated using fossil and nuclear fuels, which can produce at any time, battery storage reduces the need for extra fossil fuel power stations, probably gas-fired or diesel backup generators, just for the peaks in demand. It is insufficient to keep the former ticking over to generate electricity for a short-lived peak. Secondly, energy storage helps cope with the intermittency of wind and sun. The electricity can be stored and released when required, thus making renewable energy sources far more useful and helping to reduce the quantity generated from polluting fossil fuels. The battery scheme works in a similar way to the 35-year-old Dynawig pumped storage scheme in Wales, which pumps water up to a reservoir and releases it through turbines, where there is a sudden demand. The quoted efficiency for Dynawig, the ratio of power out to power in the pumping, is about 75%. This is comparable to generally quoted efficiencies of battery storage systems. As more of UK's electricity is produced from renewable sources with near zero fuel and carbon costs once the plant is installed, then the efficiency of the storage system becomes increasingly unimportant as renewable energy sources are free. Yes, the scheme will be built for commercial gain, which is inevitable in a non-nationalised industry, and no, it is not on Greenbelt land. There will be an opportunity to find out more about battery storage at the Joint University of Winchester and Wynn ACC lecture on October the 5th. And that's from Brian Shorter of Mountview Road, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and we now have items of historical interest. We have three this week, first from 100 years ago, then 50 years ago, and 25 years ago. That will then be followed by Chronicle comment, and then first person. So we start off with the first item of historical interest from 100 years ago.
And this is on Saturday, September the 1st, 1917. A specially valuable parcel of over 80 articles of men's underwear made by the Dippland Red Cross workers has been forwarded to the depot by Miss Gascoigne of St. Marybourne. The committee wish to express their warmest thanks to this work party for their very handsome gift. A donation of £3 has been received from Mrs. Lovell and is acknowledged with many thanks. Bales were dispatched this week to No. 10 CC Station, the ambulance ships, and the French Wounded Emergency Fund. Citizens will have read of the bombing of casualty clearing stations by German airmen and may be interested to hear that we have reason to believe that this occurred not 100 miles from No. 10 CCS. The clearing control for supplies.
50 years ago, Saturday, September the 1st, 1967, an unknown lorry driver who told the police he had seen a man with a little girl going into a copse at King's Somborne was praised by Inspector A.P.J. Keane of Rumsey yesterday. It eventually transpired that the man and little girl were father and daughter, but Inspector Keane said, although we do not know who reported the incident, we are very appreciative of the fact that he took steps to get a message to the police. We were able to take immediate action. It's fortunate in the circumstances that everything turned out to be all right.
And mine is 25 years ago, and it's dated Friday, September the 1st, 1992, and I get very jittery when I read one of these and I can remember it very clearly. The felling of a 40-foot-high poplar tree in Bishop's Waltham has raised the hackles of residents who had admired its beauty for many years. The tree, which stood in the grounds of the old Victorian Infant School in Victoria Road, was axed by developers last Friday. Residents whose houses overlooked the school were devastated to see the tree crash to the ground. They claimed that they had been assured that only one diseased tree would be lost on the site.
Now, the editorial comment, obvious charity blow at the city hospital. This week, we report that the Royal Voluntary Service will soon no longer serve Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester after 76 years. The charity has been told that its services are no longer required. Some volunteers have given their time every week for more than 30 years for no other reason than to help patients. Most have not been paid for doing so. It is not difficult to imagine their upset and that also of the patients. It is sad news that the selfless contribution of these volunteers is deemed to be not worth continuing. Former Prime Minister David Cameron's concept of the big society hinged on the idea that voluntary services and charities would plug the gap where cuts in welfare support came into effect. But in this case, it seems that generating great profits for a cash-strapped NHS may have come into play. The exact reasons for the decision are unclear, as the Trust has not answered our questions. It is clear that the NHS is at a critical point in terms of its future, especially with the much-anticipated sustainability and transformation plan due soon. The future of the RHCH will be in the spotlight. Many people will hope that the ending of the RVS service is not a portent for the future.
First Person this week is written by George Hayter, and his title for it is Time We Had Whole, that's W-H-O-L-E, clocks, Time We Had Whole clocks. People complain about the uniformity of modern Britain. Some say every town looks much the same, with the same shops from Ilfracombe to Inverness. But Winchester has unique selling points. We have our round table, the longest cathedral in England, and our far-famed trout stream. And Winchester has a unique history as the old capital of England. It's also the only place I know which has made a hero of a diver who performed his heroics under the ground. But in this competitive world where every town is vying for tourism and investment, Winchester wouldn't be harmed by a high-quality, thought-provoking novelty. I'm thinking of something that will make outsiders think Winch is quite fun and rather different. Something that will make other towns say, why didn't we think of that? Something to make Winchester literally a unique place to spend time. Who would pay, you might ask? But associating Winchester with entertaining innovation need not cost millions if we simply adjust our clocks. I'm not suggesting we put Central Hampshire in its own time zone, where we're an hour behind or ahead of everywhere else in Britain, although that would have its attractions. I'm simply suggesting that we invest in new, different clocks. 24-hour clocks. Clocks that give us, for example, the space age 21 hours in place of the more medieval 9 p.m. Instead of 12 numbers around Winchester clock faces, there would be 24. And it would take a whole day rather than half a day for the hour hand to go round. Thus, the face would be a graphic representation of a whole day rather than the rather arbitrary half a day that we have now. I admit there are drawbacks. One problem with many numbers crammed around the dial is that it will be harder from a distance to tell which hour is being pointed to. However, the odd and even numbers could be given different sized blobs to distinguish them. I realise that digital clocks, those clinical clocks with new medical displays, can do 12 and 24 hours, but faceless digital clocks aren't right for Winchester. And their stark numbers require you to perform maths if you want to know how much time you've got left for something. They lack the ability to show the time remaining in terms of a geometric angle between a hand and a point on the dial. Only a clock with hands can present amounts of time as easily understood slices of a pie. So thoroughly sensible is the concept of 24-hour clocks that they deserve a better name. How about whole-day clocks, or simply whole clocks? Whole clocks have been around for years. It's just that they've never caught on, rather as good things like bicycle helmets, gay rights and coffee shops didn't till people came round to the idea. Their production need not be expensive. When you consider the little that's involved, it's just a matter of halving the speed of the hour hand and making room for 12 more numbers. In a coordinated campaign, whole clock faces could replace the public clock faces we have now. Think of the Guildhall, the Cathedral, the County Council, the station, the Lloyds Bank clock over the High Street, and the one atop Barclays in Jewellery Street. All could be converted if the owners agree to a couple of extra cogs in the clockwork. Perhaps whole clocks could be introduced on other landmark buildings, and shops and restaurants could join in the fun by displaying their opening hours in 24-hour format. Winchester could become known as the town with different time, giving the place a new aspect for visitors to enjoy. Eventually, Winchester folk far from home would pine for whole clocks. If Winchester adopts the idea and other people follow, soon whole clocks might not even be called that. They could become known around the world as Winchester clocks.
Now for a few items of what's on in the coming weeks. This is rather short notice, but on Sunday, the 3rd of September, which is only 2 days away, and it will only be 1 day away from when you receive your memory stick, a historic Hampshire landmark will open its doors to tell the story of your drinking water. So Twyford Waterworks open day is on Sunday, the 3rd of September. The admission is £5 for adults, £4 for concessions, and children under 16 are free. And it's open from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Or if I should follow the guidelines of the previous item, it's open from 11 hours to 1600 hours. Continuing on through the week, Tuesday the 5th of September in Winchester Cathedral Choir, there is a lunchtime concert at 1 p.m. Given by Richard Prattling and John Minford, who are tenors. This is free, but there is a retiring collection. Then next weekend, from Thursday the 7th of September through to Sunday the 10th of September, it's the Winchester Heritage Open Days, and over 70 events will give you a chance to see hidden and secret places of Winchester. Information and full details about the Winchester Heritage Weekend are available from the Tourist Office on 01962 840500. That's 01962 840500. The same weekend, on Saturday the 9th of September, at Broadlands in Romsey, is the Romsey Show, which is from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tickets apparently are £17 on the day. And if you want more information about the Romsey Show on the 9th of September, that's Saturday, the telephone number to ring is 01794 517 521. That's 01794 517 521. And also on the Saturday, on the Sunday of that week, that's Sunday the 10th of September, there is the Hampshire County Sports Day at Tichborne Park near Alresford. Gates open at 9:30 in the morning. Information and tickets on 01380 831068. That's 01380 831068, and it's a chance to be part of real country activities. And then looking even further ahead, on Sunday the 17th of September, the Winchester Community Games will take place at the Winchester Sports Stadium at Bar End. There will be free activities for all ages and abilities from 12 p.m. midday to 4 p.m. And along with the sports on offer will be archery, dodgeball, football, hockey, tennis, and wheelchair racing. There will also be what is described as a chill zone with face painting and music. And the old school sports day will be at 12:30 and a 1 kilometre run at 2 p.m. Food and drink will be on sale during the day. So that's the Winchester Community Games 2017 on Sunday the 17th of September at the sports stadium at Bar End. So quite a lot happening. So I hope you find something of interest there that you may wish to attend. Lighting up times, the sun is rising around 6:25 a.m. in the morning and setting at about 7:45 p.m. in the evenings during the next week. If you know somebody who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have a problem with your recording, with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370.
The first item of news I have for you is the Plastic Duck Race raises £8,500 for the mill. More than 1,000 rubber ducks were raised down the River Itchen in a fundraising bid to save one of Winchester's most treasured historic buildings. The spectacle was the final event in aid of an appeal to keep Winchester City Mill open to the public and raised £8,500 toward the scheme. The landmark is believed to be the oldest working water mill in Britain and dates back more than 1,000 years. But its manager at the National Trust say the future of the building is under threat because of flood damage in 2014. Surveys revealed that many of the ancient beams were found to be in a bad state of decay. Temporary measures have been put in place, but in the next 12 months, repairs need to be made to ensure the building remains open. The appeal to save the mill went public in February this year and has raised £70,000 to date. But £125,000 is needed by the end of the year so that the repair work can begin in early 2018. On Saturday, some 1,400 sponsored bathtub ducks took to the water on the day, starting from near the Willow Tree pub at Durngate and progressed in a stately fashion down to the finish line at Wharf Mill. Crowds lined the route along the weirs as the slightly surreal race passed gently by. Stewards were positioned in the river to collect the ducks, which were caught up in a safety net to prevent any of them going beyond the finish line and onto the water meadows. Thanks to the mill's volunteers, bakers, visitors were also able to pick up delicious handmade treats made in the mill's wholemeal flour. There were traditional village fete games with the opportunity to snap up prizes as well as a pop-up baguette bar. Naomi Barker, one of the organisers, said all 1,440 ducks were sponsored and we had over 1,000 visitors on the day. Our staff and volunteers worked incredibly hard and we're incredibly grateful to everyone who supported us, donated a prize, sponsored a duck and visited. They all made the event so special and memorable.
The village post office to close for major revamp. Major improvements are to be made to Otterbourne post office and store. The premises will undergo a major refurbishment, including an extension, and when it reopens, it will be known as Otterbourne Food Market. It will need to close on Wednesday, August the 30th at 5:30 p.m., and is not expected to reopen until Tuesday, October the 3rd, due to the complex nature of the works. The post office will reopen later on Monday, October the 16th. Otterbourne Post Office will be a modern, local-style branch with a low-screened post office counter alongside the retail till of the store. Opening hours will be significantly longer, Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., on Sunday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. This will be an extra 58 hours of post office service a week, including all day Sunday and Saturday afternoon. The branch will also open significantly earlier and will close much later every day. These changes will make it far more convenient for customers to visit. Annette Thomas, Post Office Area Manager, said, "We are making it easier for customers to get their cash, send and collect their mail, and do their banking, because we know how important these services are to local residents. We are confident that this vibrant, new-style post office at the heart of the local community will meet customer needs. This modernisation is part of a major investment programme, the largest in the history of the post office, and will secure services for the future."
College's sports development plan supported. A major development at Winchester College has been approved, despite concerns from residents. The controversial plan includes an upgraded sports centre, pavilion and design technology building. The scheme will see a sports hall, swimming pool and fitness centre being built, as well as a new access entrance on Norman Road leading to more than 90 parking spaces. around a dozen residents gathered at the City Council's Planning Committee to voice their fears over the development, which garnered more than 30 objections, including worries about noise and light pollution, increased traffic and the removal of parking bays. But Officer Simon Avery said Planning Chiefs were satisfied the scheme had high-quality architecture. As reported in the Chronicle, alterations were made in July to the application, but this resulted in a further 8 letters of objection. The amendments included moving a support services building further away from St Cross Road and landscaping to break up the views of the car park and buildings for residents. The meeting heard that the Norman Road access entrance would be beneficial in reducing traffic on Kingsgate Road, where there is currently an entrance, as it is wider, and that traffic would be controlled because staff levels would remain around the same and sports memberships would be closely managed. David Marchant of St Cross Road said he was in favour of the sports centre but was against the support services building, calling it a massive industrial structure. He said, "The light and noise pollution would be significant but has been minimised and ignored by the Environment Planning Officer. The building of a new car park is a mistake." Resident Christine Landale branded it disgraceful and said it would impact on elderly residents at Hanover Lodge. When asked by Councillor Ian Tate about public engagement agent Deborah Ivory replied, I beg your pardon, I'll read that again. When asked by Councillor Ian Tate about public engagement, agent Deborah Ivory replied, "There was a public exhibition last summer which residents did attend, and there has been 3 meetings that should be, have been 3 meetings with St Cross residents. The plan was approved with 7 in favour and 2 against."
I have another watery item here. This one is headed Flood Defences Officially Unveiled. It's money spent on something that we hope we will never have to use, Councillor Roy Perry told the assembled crowd at a ceremony to officially unveil Winchester's new flood defences at Park Avenue. The event included a demonstration of how the new barrier will work with the removable floodgates slotted into place beside a new reinforced concrete wall that will be able to close public openings within 20 minutes of the first signs of flooding. The new removable barrier and flood wall are part of a larger scheme to protect the city, with the first stage of the scheme completed in May. The new defences will protect the St Bede's and River Park areas of the city, including St Bede Private School, Winchester School of Art, as well as homes and businesses located in the area. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Roy Perry, said it showed that Winchester took flooding seriously. The £1,085,000 project has been jointly funded by Hampshire County Council, Winchester City Council and the Environment Agency and the University of Southampton, which runs the School of Art. Wesley Jones, flood defence team leader from the Environment Agency, said, "It's a really great project, and with it taking just 2.5 years from the start to the first defences being put in as unheard of, it shows the power of good partnerships." Winchester City Council portfolio holder for environment, Councillor Jane Warwick, said, "This wonderful piece of engineering is a testament to its partnership. The greatest flooding in Winchester occurred in the winter of 2000 and 2001, when St Bede's School was inundated and forced to relocate to Berwick Avenue for several years, with significant damage to properties, and then again in the winter of 2013-14. The city was saved by the partial damming of the Itchen just below Easton and the flooding of farmland, which eased the pressure downwards downstream in Winchester. More work is to be done along the River Itchen at Water Lane."
Grays Festival connects with record audience. The final figure isn't yet in, but upwards of 2,500 people flock to the third annual Grays Festival, a rise of 15% on previous years. They were there to see one of the best-loved British hip-hop acts of the 90s, and stereo MCs had the crowds fully connected as they played at the Twyford Community event. With indie dance outfit Republica also on the bill of Hampshire's finest music and food festival, as well as a theatre stage, cooking demonstrations, and a dedicated kids area, there was something for everyone, with all the money made from the event going back into the local community. Co-founder Roger Walker said, "I think all the acts we get really enjoy the fact that we're not one of those big commercial festivals, and they like playing to an intimate crowd. Groups and organisations have until January the 31st, 2018, to apply for a grant from the proceeds, with decisions on who gets the cash decided by the end of February."
Extra care late and over budget. A major care scheme in Winchester has been further delayed, with work to cost far more than expected. The Chesil Extra Care Scheme was expected to cost £10.8 million back in 2014, but is now forecast to reach £15.4 million, a 50% increase. The baseline figure was set out in a Cabinet report in July of that year. The scheme at Chesil Street for 52 flats on the site of the former car park aims to provide care for the over 55s who want to retain some independence. The car park was closed back in February for the building work to commence, but the development is now not due to finish until February 2018. In November of 2015, civic chiefs approved an extra £2.4 million for the flats, and last year it was revealed that the work had gone £821,000 over budget. A council report at the time stated the rise in costs has been caused by additional works and fees and rerouting a BT cable, replacing soakaways and treating soft spots in the soil foundation. LABC warranties and the cost of delays due to the extra works and meeting planning conditions have seen a rise in the cost. Councillor Lucille Thompson, Liberal Democrat group leader, said, "We are concerned about the rising cost as well as the delay in completion, which now seems to be set for February next year. It was meant to be completed by the end of this month, so this is almost a five-month delay. If this is an example of how the City Council manages major projects, rising costs and delays, what hope is there that other projects, the Leisure Centre, Central Winchester Regeneration and Station Approach, coming in on time and within budget?" Excuse me. A Winchester City Council spokeswoman said, "The approved budget for the Chesil Lodge Extra Care Scheme is £15,431,560. That is the figure against which the outturn will be assessed. Figures which might be quoted from 2013 were an initial estimate prior to design preparation and site investigations. As the design of what is a complex and large-scale project developed, additional requirements were identified which have been included in the project. These include additional groundworks, improved window specification, and improved features to flats. The project remains within 10% of the original budget set by the council. The additional costs have been fully funded."
An item headed "A Lucky Escape." It was fortunate that the occupants were awake. That is the message from Winchester Fire Station after firefighters were called to a fire at a thatched cottage in Mitchell Diver. The fire, which broke out at midnight on Friday, happened at a cottage off Winchester Road. Fortunately, firefighters managed to kill the flames in the kitchen before it could spread. However, the owners of the cottage did not have the working smoke detectors, which meant if they had been asleep, the fire could have been fatal. Watch manager at Winchester Fire Station, Mark Compton, said, "We had a call which was towards Micheldever. It was a small fire in the kitchen where a cooker hood was alight in a thatched cottage. Luckily, it was limited to the cooker hood and we managed to extinguish it with hose reel and two breathing apparatus. I think the occupants were awake and noticed the fire and called us immediately, but they did not have working smoke detectors. If they were not awake, it could have been much more serious." Mr. Compton said all owners of thatched cottages should make sure they get an information pack about how to keep their property safe, provided by the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service. He added that homeowners should make sure to get a working smoke detector. Two fire engines from Winchester attended.
Neighbours gather for party to remember Dennis and Tom. An annual street party in Winchester, established nearly 10 years ago, is still going strong. The 8th annual Old Highcliffe Street Party took place in Cathedral View on Sunday. The event remembered both Dennis Kimber, whose vision it was to hold a street party, bringing friends, neighbours and family together, and of Tom Church, Tickety Boo, a well-known local character. The weather was kind this year, and well over 100 people enjoyed barbecues, children's games, a football table, a quiz and music which was decorated with colourful bunting and closed to traffic for the event. The day ended with the traditional gathering, with glasses raised in memory around two fire pits which provided more heat than was necessary on a summer evening. Leslie Kimber, Dennis's widow, said, "It was a thoroughly enjoyable day and Dennis would have been delighted that the street party has already continued for 8 years and has so clearly enhanced the community spirit by introducing new residents to old and rekindling long-standing associations. I would like to thank everyone who came." And this article is accompanied by a colourful picture of the neighbours and friends of Old Highcliffe gathering in the street, and some with their pets, two dogs, and all in colourfully dressed and looking very, very happy indeed to be on this happy occasion.
Planners approve homes proposal. A development at Chilbolton Avenue has been approved despite objections from neighbours. The scheme for 4 four-bed homes and 1 three-bed home at number 30 will include large dormer windows on the third floor, which objectors have called intimidating, overdeveloped and overbearing. Concerns were also raised about the potential loss of privacy the windows could cause to neighbours in their gardens due to overlooking, to both neighbours in Chilbolton Avenue and residents in nearby Bryan Avenue and Greenhill Road. Developers, however, insisted that the large homes were in keeping with the character of other similar-sized homes and recent local developments, and that a proposed tree wall would protect the privacy of residents in neighbouring roads. Robert Aish, a resident of Chilbolton Avenue, who spoke against the plans, admitted that there was a precedent for this type of housing development and as such did not call for the refusal of the entire scheme. Mr. Aish instead proposed that the plans be altered to replace the large dormer windows with less intrusive windows. Councillor Jane Rutter questioned whether the development of more large houses in the area was in keeping with the local plan and criticised the piecemeal nature of development of the area as a means of avoiding affordable housing requirements and said that this was something that should be campaigned against. Reminding the council that there was no such thing as precedent in planning, She blasted the proposed homes as ugly, overbearing, overdeveloped and out of character. Councillor Ian Tait said, "I can't see a planning reason to turn this down." Referring to other similar developments, he concluded that it becomes difficult to object to. The plans were approved by 7-2.
Council and Amazon to help elderly. Voice-activated technology will be trialled on elderly people receiving social care in Hampshire. In a world first, 50 social care clients receiving support from Hampshire County Council will undergo a trial with Amazon Echo's Alexa technology in a bid to revolutionise social care. The county has teamed up with Amazon and its partner Argenti Telehealthcare Partnership to trial the technology, which works with Bluetooth connectivity and Wi-Fi. Clients will all receive their own device and be able to ask the voice-activated gadget to remind them of day-to-day actions such as taking medication and checking the arrival time of their carer. Alongside this, the council is pushing for technology to advise users to drink at certain times of the day, as well as helping with general care information. The Amazon Echo device, which looks like a portable speaker, is able to listen out for voice commands and control internet-enabled devices around the home, including appliances and lights. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, portfolio holder for adult social care, said, "This is a world first for the County Council and our care technology partners. Working directly with Amazon will ensure our trial is backed by the experience of one of the biggest internet-based retailers in the world. We are very excited about the possibility this project could open up in the future and its potential to benefit the future of social care. It is part of a new scheme across the UK, with 16 councils receiving £50,000 to improve use of digital technology across social care, financially backed by NHS Digital."
Motocross event to ride on, despite residents' objections. A three-day motocross event near Winchester will go ahead despite objections from residents. The motocross donations event is due to take place near Alsford. Organisers have been granted a licence to play live and recorded music and serve alcohol from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. for the 3 days the Olympics of Motocross will take place from September the 29th to October the 1st at Ovington Down Farm. The race's organiser, SD Events, said that the entertainment, similar to previous motocross Grand Prix events at the nearby Matterley Bowl, would serve as a means to manage the 15,000 strong crowds after the day's racing had concluded, keeping spectators on site and stopping them looking for entertainment elsewhere. However, several residents in the nearby village of Cheriton objected to the proposed entertainments, which would produce similar levels of noise to the Boomtown Festival. They argued that the disturbance would be much greater as the event would be nearer to Cheriton, Beauworth and Kilmerston, and that the different topography of the land would cause more disturbance than Boomtown. At a licensing subcommittee review of the application, representatives from SD Events said there would be measures put in place to minimise any disturbance to residents, including angling speakers towards the audience, the staged reduction of noise levels from 11 p.m, providing a telephone number for residents to report to any disturbances to, as well as members from the council's environmental health team monitoring noise levels from the event. Concerns were also raised over the use of a PA system and the sounds of the motorbikes themselves. The organisers made assurances that the system and the bikes would only be heard during races each day from 12 until 4 p.m. Retired magistrate David Payne, who objected on the grounds of preventing a public nuisance due to the late time and noise levels, asked members of the subcommittee whose environmental health were they actually looking after. The committee concluded that the short period of the disruption and the steps taken by the organisers to minimise noise disruption to residents were sufficient to allow a licence to be granted.
Hen Charity looking for new base in county. A national hen charity is calling on Hampshire animal lovers in the county to help save ex-commercial hens from slaughter. The British Hen Welfare Trust held its last rehoming at its current site in Denmead and is now in urgent need of a new site and a team of volunteers. Volunteers say the ideal location would be Winchester, but the charity would like to hear from anyone in Hampshire who is able to help so that these hens can wing their way to starting their free-range retirements. A host site acts as a halfway house for hens between them leaving the farm and going off with their new keepers. The ideal site would need a barn or stable enclosure which could house the hens for a few hours plus an area for parking. The charity says it would also need volunteers to help with transport the hens from the farm to the host site. Gaynor Davies, the charity's head of operations, said, "We regularly have hundreds of hens looking for homes in Hampshire, and equally lots of kind-hearted people willing to adopt them. But all this is impossible without a host site and transport. It's hard work, but incredibly rewarding, and you'll finish the day knowing you have literally helped save hundreds of lives. So far, more than 17,000 hens have been rehomed in Hampshire, but these are the lucky few, and we need to rescue more hens from slaughter to give them a happy retirement too. The site and volunteers would only be needed once every 4 to 6 weeks. The Hampshire team has been helping hens for 8 years and would be delighted to welcome new hosts to the team, which offers great camaraderie as well as a lifeline to thousands of hens. If you think you can help, get in touch by calling 01884 860084. I'll read that again. 01884 860084.
It's difficult to follow on to that article, yeah, which is great fun. So I think we'll conclude our extracts this week there. Thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Ross Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.